Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
What's really funny is the way that the logic sounds backwards. You know, like, the guy that can help you the most right now is maybe easier to find at 14. Than the guy at 7 who you'd think just by virtue of him being drafted before is the better player. But that is not how it works. It really is projecting potential. And potential gets more general managers fired than promoted.
Well, and the reason that that's the structure of not just this, but almost any draft, is that for the very most part, the teams picking in the top 15 are the 15 worst teams. And when you're bad, it's a lot easier to stomach the idea of this guy's maybe not going to be great this year, but he has a chance to be a franchise centerpiece in 3 years. Because it's much more important to bring in a franchise centerpiece to eventually build around than to, like, make sure you're a slightly better three-point shooting team so you can win 30 games instead of 27, right? If you're the Warriors, it's much more complicated. And so, yeah, you want best available long-term talents as best you can, but you also, given the situation, you got to think about what they can bring you next year. And that's why, you know, part of me, the more you mentioned Moses Moody, the higher he rises and the more I look at his tape, the more interested I am, whether it's Moody or Booknight, because those are guys that can come in and I think provide a value today, but also have room to grow and be a potential top three player on the team in the long term. Now, will they? We don't know. But Booknight has a bag of moves that is NBA ready. He's going to be able to score. Moody has a three-point shot that is NBA ready. He's going to be able to shoot threes. He's going to be able to play some defense right away. They're both also 19, 20 years old with a lot of chance to grow. And that is kind of the type of prospect that is interesting me more and more at seven. Even though Kuminga would be really hard to pass up if he's there.
I have yet to get a sense that Kuminga will be there.
Really?
The people that I've asked basically have said almost unanimously he won't get past six if he even drops to six. That most people see him as five. And that everybody we've talked to has largely said, yeah, five is pretty much, you're not going to be able to trade up into the five, you know, and maybe the six as well. So I think Kuminga is probably a pipe dream, but if he somehow falls, I'd be curious to know who passes him up.
If Kuminga is gone, if Barnes is gone,
just for the record, right now I'm looking at, let's see, this is a ESPN mock draft where Cunningham, Green, Mobley, Suggs, Barnes, Booknight, Kuminga goes to the Warriors. The Ringer mock draft as of 7:27 is Barnes, Booknight, Giddy, Kuminga goes 8th to the Magic. I could check others, but most of the mock drafts I've seen over the last week have Jonathan Kuminga falling not just to the Warriors, but beyond them.
Here's the deal. What if in the name of grabbing the most potentially sexy NBA talent, Jalen Suggs is there?
Now, if Jalen Suggs is there, that's a no-brainer.
If Jalen Suggs slips to six, or to seven.
Yeah. It
good God.
I haven't seen that anywhere because it seems like there's a consensus that the Raptors are going to let Kyle Lowry walk and draft his replacement in Jalen Suggs and hope he just walks in and basically is at least that good. I would legitimately consider trading 7 and 14 if you could get to 4 and draft Jalen Suggs. I think Jalen Suggs is the player in this draft that the Warriors would most want. That's without any inside knowledge.
He fits the upside, and he fits the ready-to-go day one side.
And he fits positionally as a third guard who can handle and score and defend. It's, you know, the guys he's compared to in the draft guides, Brandon Roy, Jamal Murray, like, that's the kind of player who could help you a ton off the bench right now and potentially become a starter in a few years, and that is very appealing.
I mean, if you told me that Jalen Suggs turned into your point and Curry is now more of your shooting guard,
sure,
that could happen.
Yeah, yeah, and Suggs could defend the best point guards in the league, hopefully, as time goes on. He's big, he's strong. That'd be the best. I don't think that's going to happen, unfortunately.
Well, if he drops to 7, something has been discovered about him.
Probably, yeah.
And at that point, I'd be leery. Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's definitely a possibility. The other possibility is watch other GMs fall in love more with promise than what is already pinging on their radar. Plus, what, Suggs is how old?
22, maybe. But the problem with that is it's not like a normal terrible GM in the four spot. It's the Raptors.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're right. You're right. Yeah.
Like if that was the magic.
Right. He's not going to get the.
Maybe we're talking about something, but
Jerry's not going to get the fall for the old banana in the tailpipe.
It's
Bob Myers on the urgency of winning now.
We want to win, but do you draft a player that makes you better in 1 year that might not be better in the second year? And these are the things we get paid to try to get right. There's short-term decisions that are good. There's short-term decisions that are short-term decisions that you regret. And fans and ourselves will blame us, which we would deserve if we get it wrong. So that's what we're trying to figure out. This stuff isn't easy. It isn't always clear. You'd like clarity. You know, last year I've said this before, Clay being injured made it hard to see what we were. And I really hope next year, and I think we all do, let's find out what we are, whatever that is, whatever it comes out looking like. Can a rookie help us quicker, later? Rookies traditionally don't help early. I don't care who they are. But you'd like to find guys that can play a little bit with what we're limited to do in free agency, which is minimums, maybe taxpayer mid-level. You know, maybe that's a chance to grab some vets. We've done that before, but that was a team that everybody wanted to come to. Will veteran players want to come now with Clay coming back? We'll see. So we have to balance all that stuff. But we hear it all, Anthony. The idea that we don't want it to happen soon in the front office or Joe doesn't want it to happen soon isn't accurate. We all want the same thing, but we have to kind of figure out how to go about doing that.
I mean, right there is the perfect soundbite to explain how many plates Bob Myers is trying to spin right now.
It's tough.
There are so many balls to juggle. There are so many plates to spin. There are so many different directions this can go. And trying to tell you what they're going to do at 7 feels like an impossibility when we don't even know what's going on 1 through 6 for sure. It's a fluid situation.
Yeah, they have philosophical issues to address. They have fit needs to address. I mean, they have issues that they have to think about that your average lottery team does not.
Right.
And because of that, if you say anything other than, I have a feeling they'll keep 7 and 14, you are awash in guesswork.
Yeah, and that's what we all are. We'll take the guessing out of it come Thursday when we're at the over at Chase Center. It's our first remote in, 2 years? Actually, that's not true. We all did remotes from our house
It's our first remote together.
Yes. It's a remote where we will not be remote from each other. We'll be remote on a never mind. Now we're getting too complicated. Brian Kenny is always great to talk to. And not only is there a big, big basketball decision coming up, but as soon as that's made, big baseball decisions are already coming up. There are big baseball decisions all around us. We've already seen one National League West team make a big decision. Adam Frazier is a San Diego Padre. what are the San Francisco Giants going to do? What might the A's actually do, if anything? Brian Kenny, one of my favorites, one of our favorites, one of your favorites. Right around the corner, looking forward to saying hello to him, so stick around. Much more coming up here, and it's a bonanza. We've been telling you, an awful lot of stuff happening. Training camp opening for the Niners, NBA draft, trade deadline, NBA free agency. It's kooky around here, so stay tuned. Bonanza brought to you by Pacific Catch, sustainable seafood, West Coast style. Damon Ratto and Kolsky, 95.7 The Game.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Damon Ratto and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. We'll even welcome the Los Angeles Dodgers to town. You know, the beauty of baseball is there are so many mulligans built into a 162-game season. Rare do you get to this point in the year, and it's big regular season games, and that's what the Giants got. What an important home stretch with the Dodgers in town for three, followed by the Astros. First is for standings. After that, it's for style points to talk about all of it. A man who always brings plenty of style points to baseball conversations, MLB Network's Brian Kenny joining us on 95.7 The Game. Damon Ratto and Kolsky, thank you, Brian, as always, for your time. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. Good to be with you guys.
It's great to have you with us. And, man, as we look around the landscape, nobody expected. If baseball's a poker game, nobody expected the San Francisco Giants to be sitting in the at the final table of the National League, but it looks like they are going to be there. And so whatever the plan was, the situation has changed. What do you think Farhan covets the most right now, Brian? A bat, a starter, or a closer?
You know, I don't know what Farhan is thinking. Whatever he's thinking, I'm good with it. I know the last couple of days on the show when we've talked about impact players, I don't think anybody would impact the team more than Max Scherzer, and that hasn't been a weak point for the Giants. They've got very good starting pitching, but Scherzer is one of the few guys that comes in like Verlander did a few years ago for the Astros, where you know, he's your number one playoff starter. He is a guy who, like, every fifth day is, you know, pretty much sure to give you six, seven, eight innings, giving up one or two runs. One of the few guys that really, you know, puts a dent in things.
Right. Win day.
Changes things. Now, Kimbrel, the same sort of thing. Craig Kimbrel is also, you know, really locked in this year, and he's a big guy at the end of a game. But I would think Scherzer is kind of the number one prize. He can add him to any rotation.
Okay, then, given the teams that have been mentioned as likeliest to go after him, who can pile up the most assets and win a bidding war?
Yeah, probably the Dodgers, I would think. And now, I don't know if teams get into bidding wars for rentals at this point. Now, maybe, Ray, it is true for Scherzer. I know from what I've heard and, you know, working with John Heyman every day, that, you know, starting position players aren't gathering, you know, a big, you know, harvest of late. So maybe Scherzer is that sort of guy. But I would think the Dodgers are the sort of organization that can lump together, like, major league ready guys, if it's Gavin Lux and that type of player, as well as guys who are down lower if you're looking to, you know, if Mike Rizzo is looking to get more guys at, like, the high A, double A level.
So go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, just from the Giants' perspective, How much extra do you think they ought to be willing to put into their offer if the alternative is the Dodgers end up with Scherzer?
Yeah, I mean, that's, you always ride that line. And no matter who you are, whether you're the Giants and you're on top, or you're, say, the Angels and you're just hoping for, like, a second wild card, you always have to wonder, like, how much am I giving now that's going to hurt me 2 years down the road? So maybe this year, I know it's hard to say when you're in first place and you've continually been holding off the Dodgers and the Padres, but it is kind of house money this year. Like, this wasn't expected. It is kind of a bonus year. You are getting great years from your veterans, so maybe you look at it that way, that this is a year to cash in on a year that, you know, Posey and Crawford, Longoria, when he comes back, are still, you know, doing things for you. So I don't know. It's just that you never try to give away too much. I've always thought, like, in terms of free agents or trading, trade deadline players, I always thought finishing second was a good thing. You know how they always, like, rip GM saying, oh, he finishes second a lot. I like a GM who finishes second a lot. There's a reason you finish second.
Okay, let's say, as a hypothetical, the Dodgers win whatever bidding war does assemble for Scherzer. What are the next five guys that would be really useful for a team in the Giants situation that, even if they don't win the division, they look pretty likely to be in the postseason?
Well, it's a myriad of probably mix-and-match relief pitchers. You've seen a few start to go already, Chafin from the Cubs. Again, Kimbrel is at the top of that food chain, but there's always available smaller players to get after. I would think it's mostly in the bullpen. You know, like where would you put Chris Bryant exactly? There's room for Bryant, clearly, in an outfield position or third base. There's always, you know, a spot for him somewhere. I think Bryant would be that impact guy. I don't think there's really room. Is there room for Javi Baez? Not really. And you'd be giving up something to get a player like that. So, you know, those guys are useful. You know, with the way I look at things, I'm always looking at doing things on the cheap. So I'd rather have Isaiah Kiner-Falefa of the Rangers. You know, that's like kind of a Giants type of player. Good fielder, good base runner, not a big bat, but better than a useful guy. A guy who, if he hits at all, is, you know, actually close to being a star. But I know Bryant is much more of a name, and I think his OPS plus is about 131 right about now. So he's been a very good bat this year.
Brian Kenny here with us on 95.7 The Game. Since you brought up Javier Baez, I have to ask you about that walk-off home run last night. How far away do you think we are from seeing a player actually ride his bat around the bases like it's a pony?
There is, like, I forgot who it was. There was one player that I think hit a home run off Babe Ruth or something that backed around the bases, you know, ran the bases backwards and did a cartwheel. Those things have happened. Of course, there were big fist fights at the end of the game. He knows. He can tell you about it. So I don't know. It's kind of crazy. I would expect, given that Amir Garrett was suspended 5 games for what he did, which was, you know, basically his unsportsmanlike conduct, which then instigated Baez, and then it became more heated. And he walked toward Baez, but only when Baez hopped the fence and came toward him. I would think there has to be some sort of suspension for Baez. Like, if you're really on, you know, down on taunting, and you're saying, no, taunting leads to violence, well, he's got to get a game. Even if it's one game and it's just kind of ceremonial, you got to give him one game. If you gave Amir Garrett, 5, you got to give Baez at least one.
Yeah, when I think of on-field actions that could lead to violence, if you look it up in the dictionary, you see Javi Baez's walk-off from last night. There is no doubt about it. Brian, let's talk about the trades that feel kind of big that already have happened. Nelson Cruz to the Twins, or I'm sorry, from the Twins to Tampa Bay, that feels big. And Adam Frazier showing up in San Diego was kind of unexpected, and that feels big.
Yeah, I don't know. What did you guys think of the Frazier deal? I was thinking, oh, Frazier to the Padres. I go, wait a second, the Padres? Like, they've got that bat already. They've got a lefty contact-hitting bat already, and he's 2 years younger in Cronenworth. I was surprised by that. He's a useful player, but he's kind of a duplicate of what they already have.
Well, my theory, since you asked, is that he's not really there to affect Cronenworth as much as he is to try to give them something else in the outfield that they don't seem to be getting from the guys they've got now. And even though Adam Frazier is probably best at second base, they could still put him in the outfield, or they could put Cronenworth out there from that time to time. He seemed to be more of a multi-flex guy. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, yes and no. Now, the only I know what they like to do, and even though their bench, like if you watch their games, I end up watching a lot of Padres games, and even like Kim and Profar aren't hitting, but they're very useful guys. So I don't look at them like they're dead weight, and they field their position, and they can field multiple positions. So it's kind of like the guys the Giants have. This is why teams win. So I have an idea of what Preller is thinking, that Frazier is useful. He's plus defense. He's plus five defensive runs saved at second base. He's a decent base runner. He's an excellent contact hitter. He's the number one contact hitter in the National League. Jake Cronenworth is third. They like putting Cronenworth at first base, and they like his glove at first, and that gives them an elite fielding infield. Frazier at second, and then Cronenworth at first. Again, Frazier can play the outfield, but I tell you what, Sam has been dynamite. After a bad start, he sets the table. He has an excellent process at the plate, great plate discipline. Grisham has been very good, and Will Myers is still a useful player, and I think he's about a 117 weighted runs created plus. He's above league average. He's good. He's not great, but he's good. So their outfield is kind of set. I think this sits down Eric Hosmer, which is an interesting move, given that Hosmer's got 5 years left on his deal, and he's making, I think, $18 million this year. You usually try not to alienate a guy that makes that kind of money that's under contract for five more years.
Getting back to the Giants specifically, if they decide Max Scherzer is either too old or too expensive for our taste, who's the next best starting pitcher? Is there, in fact, a starting pitcher who will be on the market that will make an impact on the Giants staff?
Oh, I don't know. Who are you even thinking of? I mean, throw some names.
Berrios, maybe?
Who?
Berrios is a guy we've talked about.
Berrios is good. Kyle Gibson is good for the Texas Rangers this year. He's not a big swing and miss guy. Berrios has a higher ceiling in the future. But I don't know. Those guys that you mix in, are you getting necessarily better? I don't know if you are. I look at it, and I guess Berrios really fills a spot. He's kind of a two or a three. But I don't see anybody making the dent. I mean, I get excited about Scherzer because Scherzer slots in for the Giants, even with Gausman's great year. He slots in number one, game one starter. So I think that's an impact. And beyond that, I don't see giving up a ton to get a player that you're either renting or giving up more, depending on how much contract time a guy has left. Because you're not getting Berrios cheap.
Do you think the Rockies could come off of John Gray?
I guess so, but again, is he better than your top three starters now? And so what is he actually doing for you? I don't know. Again, maybe you're watching him every day and you're thinking, no, pitching depth will make a big difference because, by the way, the season's not over and they're only up by like three games, so you're going to need a stretch run as well. He would help depending on how much pitching depth you need.
Who do you think would be the Giants' third starter right now? It looks like Cueto is moving in the wrong direction at this point in the year. Wood has been impressive. We know that the first two bullets fired will be Gausman and DeSclafani. So who do you think is the third right now, and is John Gray better than that guy?
Yeah, I don't know. You're probably right.
Logan Webb,
it's Webb right
Logan
now.
Logan Webb starting a playoff game, I'm holding my breath.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but, you know, like in this day and age, you can, one, see how the guy is pitching down the stretch. I know, like, analytically, you're not supposed to believe in a hot starter, but there is something to the way a guy has been throwing recently. And you can see what the break is, what the action that the player has on the ball, if he's getting, hit lucky or unlucky, what type of action he has, how many innings he's probably going to be able to give you. So you really have to make that decision, especially a third starter. You kind of make that decision in the final week of the season leading up to the playoffs. Yeah, you just don't know what a guy is going to be specifically looking at. And again, in this day and age, you can specifically track the guy's velocity, break on the ball, his overall stuff, how crisp his action is on the ball, besides obviously his results. I'm not discounting all the other things like, being tough with guys on base and being mentally tough, executing your pitches and not giving up runs. I'm saying that's paramount. But then beyond that, you can say, all right, he's not giving up runs, but is he getting lucky on these sorts of run prevention games? Or is his stuff really good that he deserves to be giving up one run or two runs per start?
What are the A's looking for, and how aggressively are they looking for it?
They fill at the margins. I don't see them. They fill at the margins. They get more bullpen guys. It's what they've done from the start. They're constantly, they're buying on the cheap. So I see them kind of filling out from the bottom. They already made that, the one move with Chafin. I would see them doing more of that. I can't see them doing something bold and aggressive. It's just been a while since they've been able to do that.
Do you hold your breath for any stadium resolution?
Oh, I have no idea. I mean, I'm going to follow that. I couldn't even speak intelligently to that. I don't know.
I don't think they could either, so we're all fair there.
I don't know.
Brian Kenny, of course, one of the best from MLB Network. You're the rare guest where we can pivot to a halfway decent boxing conversation. And I just have to ask, because, you're an old school boxing guy. Are Logan and Jake Paul good for the sport of boxing in the attention economy that we're living in?
You know what? I'm going to say yes. And here's why. Because, you can say, hey, it's junk sport. It's not the true sport. It's not the top guys. Well, my answer to that is, if those guys didn't exist, then every promoter and TV executive and manager and boxer could say, hey, look, I'm not fighting these big fights. You can't get a million pay-per-view buys anymore. We're not looking at those days. The cable era is transforming into a new era. The audience has kind of splintered off. It's bifurcated. And you could say, hey, look, it's not that era. You're just not going to get that type of money, so why should I fight the top guys? And now you can point to them. You can point to the YouTube guys. You can point to Mike Tyson. You can point to Roy Jones. Probably soon you can point to Oscar De La Hoya and say, those guys are getting a million buys. How come you're not? So, look, I'm going to be calling Errol Spence and Manny Pacquiao on pay-per-view, Fox pay-per-view, August 21st. So, that's excellent. But Pacquiao is 42. And, Bud Crawford is out there as the number two welterweight. He has one of the belts. Spence has two of them or three of them. Spence is considered the welterweight champion, but Crawford is there. The top guys have to fight. I'm all supposed to be calling, Tyson Fury versus Deontay Wilder. That was pushed back till October. But those guys are out there. Anthony Joshua is out there, and they're not fighting. They're sort of fighting here and there. Again, Spence Pacquiao is excellent. That's worth a big pay-per-view buy. But other than that, the reason the time – and look, Spence is – top of the food chain right now. This guy's a great fighter. Anthony Joshua is a great fighter. Tyson Fury is a great fighter when he's in shape and engaged. Wilder has all-time power. These guys should be totally, have the audience at their feet. They should be doing a million buys on pay-per-view every single time out, but they're not fighting on a regular basis. So who gets a million pay-per-view buys? The YouTube guys. Those guys. So I say they deserve it. They're captivating the fans' imagination, and the top trained world-class world champions just are not doing that.
Is Canelo Alvarez your pound-for-pound champ right now?
Oh, yeah, he's number one. Yeah, the combination of resume and skill and everything. No, look, and Canelo has been fighting most of the top guys. He hasn't fought Triple G the third time. I think I'd still like to see him fight Golovkin a third time. But if he does fight Caleb Plant in September, which, there's negotiations. You hear different things. It's going well. It's not going well. They say that it just broke off now. But if he fights Caleb Plant and he beats Caleb Plant, well, he just moved up to 168 pounds and has taken all four belts. So that's significant. So all that I just said, hey, this isn't compelling. You can't say that about Canelo. He moved up in weight and he fought every top guy, cleaned out the division, if he fights Caleb Plant and beats him.
What should the Warriors do at 7 on Thursday? Brian, thank you so much. We love talking sports with you, man. You're the best.
All right. Thank you, fellas. Take care.
Thank you very much. Brian Kenny, MLB Network. He probably had an answer. Probably was ready to go. But we just –
the answer would have been Canelo.
Canelo Alvarez, definitely.
Hey, so it's not the worst pick.
He can work you inside, work you outside.
You said they needed more size and strength, right?
You get it.
I bet he could box out. He could help the rebounding.
Totally.
No pun intended.
There literally was no pun intended there. That's accurate. I did it totally by mistake.
You just naturally tell dad jokes.
Yes. It just oozes out of my pores at this point.
Yeah, that deserved the rim shot. There's no doubt. Anyways,
I did, because of your question to Brian Kenny, just pulled up the last six starts for Logan Webb and Alex Wood, because as you said, I think Johnny Cueto is probably out of that conversation right now. Webb's been nails his last six. Now, there was some time off in the middle of that, but, you know, 1.5 ERA, 179 batting average against, and Alex Wood hasn't been bad, but he hasn't been that good. So that's going to be an interesting battle for who would start a third playoff game if they don't make a deal.
Hey, you want to continue to have that stock go up? Win tonight. Logan Webb, tonight. Giants and Dodgers, tonight. Games that matter in a 162 games, about 80 of these are built to be disposable, matters tonight. Giants and Dodgers, forget about the fluff of baseball's regular season. Sometimes things matter more than others, and this matters a ton. These games against the Dodgers mean a ton to both of the teams. And then here comes Houston afterwards, and I guess at that point we're talking style points. And oh, by the way, Houston just did a deal. Kendall Graveman.
Yeah, which is pretty unusual given the fact that, well, Houston is dealing, A, within its own division, and B, with a team that's essentially on the verge of being a wild card team.
That they're playing tonight.
Right.
I think, first of all, doing that deal for a pitcher who's got an ERA under one at the moment tells you all you need to know about whether Seattle believes they're actually in this thing. They don't. So I'm not too worried about that. Sure, though, Graveman, the way he's pitching this year, it would help anybody.
And truth is, because he's been a starter in the past, you know, if Framber Valdez goes down or somebody like that, they've got somebody built in who can do that.
Boy, I sure wouldn't do that, but
I wouldn't.
See your
that
point.
Wouldn't be my first choice. But if I got a guy hurt,
desperate times, I suppose. But he is a better pitcher in a relief role for Seattle this year than he'd ever been as a starter, and it's not close.
Talking about trades that are happening before you get to the event horizon of any deadline, how about our first big NBA trade of the week? Did you see what happened with the Grizzlies? And Ray and I talked about this a little when you were out yesterday, Matt, but
it's
what do you think?
Very interesting one.
Valanciunas going from Memphis to the Pelicans for Steven Adams, Eric Bledsoe, and they swap picks 10 and 40 for
It's 17 and 51 for 10 and 40.
Right. It's a pick swap. And Valanciunas for Eric Bledsoe and Steven Adams. Somebody asked earlier about what could the Warriors do about Steven Adams. Steven Adams is about to be described to you as Steven Adams' expiring contract.
Well, maybe. He's overpaid. He's still, like, I'm not
sure. He's a rebounder.
He's a rebounder and a defender. And he can't do certain things, and that hurts you. And he's certainly not a modern center, but neither is Valanciunas. I'm not sure, quite frankly, the reason the Pelicans were willing to do this is they wanted some money freed up. So basically, they gave Memphis a draft upgrade twice in the first and second round in order to get rid of the contracts of Steven Adams
right,
and Eric
in order
Bledsoe.
To be a bigger player on the free agent market when
and
it comes
yeah,
on.
Yeah, I think they want to pay Lonzo Ball, ideally.
Valanciunas
can play.
Valanciunas and Zion is interesting, and they fit together better because Valanciunas can get out of the lane.
A little more than Adams, but probably still not enough for my taste next to Zion. But that's beside the point. He's definitely a better fit than Adams. What's interesting to me here is, like, this is a lot for Memphis. Eric Bledsoe, overpaid as a bench guard, defender, and burst scorer, could be really interesting for Memphis. Steven Adams, you know, 20 minutes a game as a rebounder and defender could be really effective. Not, as I said, so much less effective than Jonas Valanciunas. And, you know, with Memphis, your ball handler is your point guard like it's supposed to be, and you're not worried about the spacing next to Zion and so on and so forth. And if Adams is stuck in the lane, Jaren Jackson is a guy who can go outside as a big. Like, they have more flexibility. But moving from 17 to 10 is kind of a big deal. I mean, all those dudes we're talking about potentially being available to the Warriors at 14 are obviously available at 10 now to the Pelicans, and 17 is right around the edge of where, like, the level drops a bit, I think. So my guess would be Memphis has someone they really like. Now, I don't know who that is, But my guess is it's somebody they don't expect to be there past 10. And you know, the rumor mill says they're still trying to move further up. So actually, one of the things I thought about, and I'm lying, I did not think of it myself. I can't remember which podcast I heard it on. It could have been a Kevin O'Connor deal. It might have been
one of those guys.
It might have been Russillo. But, oh no, actually, I think it was Zach Lowe. What if Memphis was willing to offer number 10 and a player to the Warriors for number 7? Now, who would that player be? Maybe DeAnthony Melton, maybe a Brandon Clark, but a guy on a rookie contract who's capable of contributing today. Like, if you could turn 7 into 10 and a player, Kyle Anderson, Lucas said, wouldn't be a terrible idea. He's not on a rookie contract, though. I think it'd be better for Clark or Melton. So Clark would be a 3-4-5 guy off the bench, scorer who could help. Melton, a bench guard, sort of.
I got to start Googling box scores before I can answer that question right. with any credibility at all.
To me, you're looking for ways to add talent that can help next year. Now, of course, from 7 to 10, that might be the difference between Jonathan Kuminga and Franz Wagner, which, you know, that might cost you on the back end. But if you could move just a bit down, and let's say Kuminga is the guy that the Grizzlies are especially interested in, dropping 3 spots might not hurt you that much in terms of who's available in the draft. And if it gave you one more player for next year's rotation, that gets kind of interesting to me.
Nothing short of our longest commercial-free segment of the entire day around the corner, and good, because we're asking good questions. We got pressure all around us, and we still have an awful lot of stuff to get to, including Kyle Shanahan talking about his football team. So stick around. Much more coming up here on Damon Ratto and Kolsky. We're brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full-service banking, no compromises.
Damon Ratto and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
Yeah, thanks for listening to this station. If you're into curated stations, go ahead and download the Odyssey app. You're going to find hundreds of stations for the music you like and the tone you want it in. Like, you know, working out, a little something for the tailgate, a little something for the backyard barbecue. Audio Odyssey exclusive stations. Right now on the Odyssey app, brought to you in part by Macy's and by Geico. Download it once, download it twice, download it another time after that. Welcome back, Damon Ratto and Kolsky. We're about to get into some sound from Kyle Shanahan. We were just talking about what would it take to actually buy the Warriors' 7th overall pick. Could a team like Memphis getting aggressive possibly move up and do that? This is your final, you get a chance, Matt, to add Grayson Allen to the Golden State Warriors. I know how much you want to see that. But look, it is an interesting question. Would the Warriors rather have a once through the league second year on his rookie contract that has already shown a little flash, or would they rather start their own project of their own? So let's talk about guys who are on rookie deals in Memphis. Oh, by the way, Bob Myers was talking about moving back, moving up, who's trading up. He says it's going to be hard for anyone to trade up in this draft because players are coveted.
I think it's going to be tough based on conversations. I think it's going to be hard. I don't say that specific to the Warriors. I just think that's probably the league. I think it's going to be tough. You just saw a team move up to 10, reportedly. But, you know, you may be talking about up from us, which is like a different challenge. Those teams are wanting young players, wanting young stars, and rightly so.
All right, so Kolsky, run some stats at me. Run
Before
some
I
possibilities
do, quickly,
at us.
I understand his words were saying trades are going to be tough, but didn't they also kind of say we could trade down but not up?
Yeah, I mean,
because what he's saying is those guys ahead of us, they want the young players who might not help them right away, but that doesn't describe the Warriors. So, you know, that part of it's interesting. I mentioned DeAnthony Melton. He's not on his rookie contract. I forgot the Grizzlies signed him to a deal when they traded for him. So he's $8 million a year, which is probably too much because I don't know how the Warriors would match that without giving up something you like. Maybe I'd have to look. Maybe you could combine like Bazemore and Mulder and Lee and the pick and get, you know, the 10 and DeAnthony Melton back, he is a really interesting player. 23 years old, long combo guard you could bring off the bench, good three-point percentage, capable of passing the ball. They have a nickname for him. It's like Mr. Do Something or something like that in Memphis because he just comes off the bench and makes stuff happen. I'd really like him. The rookie contract
Mr.
guys,
Do Something is the least marketable worst nickname I've ever
that
heard.
That might not be it.
Mr. Do Something.
That may not be it, but it's something that reflects he's just a dude that, you know, he's not the best player in the world, but he comes off the bench and just makes things happen. The other two guys, the two rookie contract guys that are interesting to me are both big guys to a degree. They list Brandon Clark as a small forward. He's probably more of a four. He's incredibly athletic. He had a phenomenal rookie year. Came in off the bench, weird season, 12.6 boards, shot the ball 62% from the field and 36% from three-point line. This year was much worse. 10 points a game on 51.5 from the field and 26 from the three-point line. So you got to decide, you know, which Brandon Clark do you think you're getting? But he's an athletic upgrade, and he'd be a bench forward that could help the Warriors, I think. And if he was just the cost of moving down three, like if you could get him by moving three spots back in a draft that should have some interesting prospects still available at 10, I think I'd think about that. I think I would think about that. The one other guy is Xavier Tillman. And I don't know if he is good enough to be the only thing you get back to move from 7 to 10. But he is on a rookie contract. He's under contract for $2 million or less for three more years. And he's a young big who, if you remember, made some plays in the play-in game. So, you know, a guy that could be viable for you.
Yeah, this starts to get into the area where
and Michigan State guy.
I changed
Sorry,
my mind.
Go ahead.
Yeah. It almost gets too complicated to bother with. And by that I mean, you know, what are you gaining for the surety of picking, say, a 10 you like? If there's a 10 you like, there's nothing wrong with taking them at 7 if you like them enough. I mean, the only reason to get out of the 7 is that you're not crazy about any of the 7s that have been presented to you. And I don't know if that's true for them. But
well, I guess the other reason would be if you're equally crazy about 3 or 4 of them, so you feel like you could get one of the guys you like at 10, but you're getting basically a free player out of it. I mean, that's the appeal for me, is how many times last year did we say, boy, the Warriors have a nice top 3 or 4 and a lot of good 9s and 10s, but they could really use some, like, 6th, 7th, and 8th best guys on a team, and maybe DeAnthony Melton or Brandon Clark could slide into one of those spots and be a bigger contributor than somebody like Michael Mulder or Kent Bazemore, and bring a little more right now NBA value to you while still allowing you to pick relatively high in the draft.
And we know the Warriors are a little, you know, let's just say it, they're a little weak at power forward. Brandon Clark would fit that bill.
Yeah.
He also is 6 rebounds almost a night, 5.5. I like the fact that the guy is much less than a turnover per game. He's careful with the ball. He is not an over fouler for a defensive-minded player early in his career, which is another telltale sign of decent defensive player. Gets almost a block per game, a steal per game. Brandon Clark, you know, it's not a headline-grabbing name, but serviceable. And how about this? If Brandon Clark were in this year's draft with these kind of numbers, you would think the Warriors would consider him at 7.
Yeah, and if they had gotten rookie Brandon Clark, like if you just told me the Warriors are adding the rookie version of Brandon Clark to next year's team, they're a better team. And as Lucas just mentioned in my ear, his value in Memphis has probably dropped a bit because, you know, they've got other people in front of him between Jaren Jackson and you know, they've added they've replaced Valanciunas with Adams now. Like, at best, he's your first big off the bench, but I don't even know if he's that high in the rotation. They like Tillman, too. So maybe that's just a sort of happy marriage between one team that, let's say the Grizzlies really like Giddy or Book Knight or someone who might not slip to 10. I don't know. It's just there are not a lot of potential trade partners, as Bob Myers said, and Memphis seems like potentially they could be one.
Maybe. I mean, at this point, you know, your brain starts to boil.
Yes.
But I think...
That's right.
I think... And I don't know this, and I was sort of hoping that Fran Fraschilla could have offered more sort of guidance on it, but I think there has to be a point where you just turn the phone off and just go, I know what we're doing. We're doing this.
See, when you're
and when I say turn the phone off, I mean, yeah, you take the call, but you're not really listening with both ears, because I don't think you get overwhelmed that close to the draft. Because for a trade like this, you've talked about it a while. And you're either intrigued by it or not. And if you're intrigued by it, you're probably ready to pull the trigger on it. And if you're not, then you don't really want to have any more pitches about it.
Right. What I think is very easy to kind of see happening is if there is a draft day trade that the Warriors enter, it won't be because Bob Myers' phone was the phone that rang. It will be because Bob Myers made that call.
The exception being if someone falls to 7 that is not expected by other NBA people to fall to 7, whether that's Kuminga or, let's say, Scotty Barnes or Book Knight or whoever it is, that if someone ends up being available at 7 that is more attractive to people below the Warriors than they expected to be available, then maybe those last-minute calls do come in, which is kind of why I think Fran was saying basically, yeah, when you're in the 7 slot, you can't turn off the phone, because what happens before you in the draft could dictate a change in the offers you've been receiving, right?
Yeah.
A lot of moving parts.
There's so many moving parts. I mean, look, Detroit, Cade Cunningham, just kind of write it down, feel good about it. Houston is going to take Jalen Green or Evan Mobley. Cleveland then takes the player that wasn't just taken in Jalen Green or Evan Mobley. Now Toronto is looking like they are married to the concept of Jalen Suggs, but maybe they start thinking Kuminga's our guy or Scotty Barnes is our guy. So now Orlando is looking at Scotty Barnes or Kuminga. And then, I mean, there's Oklahoma City would take Jalen Suggs. I'm trying to find a way for Jalen Suggs to fall for the Warriors.
I don't think they would. It's hard for me to believe the Magic wouldn't.
Unless they fall in love with Book Knight. Unless they fall in love with Alperen Sengun. Unless they've fallen in love with Davion Mitchell, who, by the way, used to be the name you'd hear in all these, and now not so much. So let's see what happens to him. This, lots of moving parts. Lots of moving parts.
Good times. In a draft where there's 3 or 4 sort of locked-in picks at the top, 7 is just far enough down that there are a ridiculous number of possibilities for what can happen.
Did anyone see that Detroit's taking calls? I saw one of those rumors today. There's no way. Come on.
I don't really believe it either.
That's the other thing is that, you know, I don't know that people who put those out are necessarily liars, although I suspect some of them are, but I do believe that they can easily be lied to.
Yes. And I think, look, Detroit obviously feels like it is a good thing for them to appear to be open for business. Like, clearly they believe they will receive offers that they want to receive and they want to see what those offers are, et cetera, et cetera. So they don't want to turn that spigot off by saying, we're taking Cade Cunningham, leave us alone. At the same time, they've got this kid in Cade Cunningham who's pretty much the consensus best prospect available in the world, who has said out loud, I want to be a Detroit Piston. And the first thing you say now is, meh.
Yeah, well, we were going to kick the can down the road, maybe take another look.
I might have come out and said, he's our guy, he wants to be here, and we want to have him, and it's going to be great. Just to start things off on a good feeling.
But the other thing is, picking first is the one place where you don't have to lie at all.
Yeah,
I mean, you don't gain anything by misdirecting. You either say, yeah, we'll take calls on it, or you just go, no, this is our guy. And every hint that I've gotten, for what that's worth, is that, you know, they thought about Green, but they want Cunningham.
I'll just say this. Don't take Darko. Mm. Welcome, everybody, to your 5 o'clock hour.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.